morning. Pardon all this fun noise up here. So if you came here this morning expecting to see one teacher, what a bonus you have. You get most of us, all of us that are in town. We like to do this after an extended series to see if you all have any questions or observations or something that you learned that excites you and has changed your life, or something that you disagree with entirely and you'd like to challenge the teachers. They love that. They love being challenged. If you just have something off subject entirely and it just strikes your mind, this is your chance. So we're going to start out by having two of the teachers, Jeremy Kintzer and Catherine Anderson, share their perspective on some things that they got out of the series. As you know, we started with the Beatitudes, then we had a short break, and then during that time, we thought, why not take a deep dive into the whole Sermon on the Mount? And so that's what we have been doing for a long time. A long time. I don't remember back when we weren't doing this. So I'm going to let Jeremy, why don't you start, and then Catherine, take it away, and then I will ask the two questions that we received from you. No, two questions that we received from all of you, which could mean that we did a fantastic job of teaching and you have no questions, or it could mean that if there's no questions coming from you, then our teachers will quiz you. So you might be thinking of a question now so that that doesn't happen. Okay, Jeremy, you're up.
Ginny's got all the zingers this morning. That was perfect. Oh, yeah. If you want to direct any questions directly to Ginny, you can do that as well. Sorry, my bad. Yeah, I started this off by trying to pass the mic along to her, forgetting that I was going to be the first one to talk. So I have a couple just sort of basic points as we were thinking about what this whole series meant to us. For me, particularly, I feel like I've been super blessed with everybody in this family and specifically on the teaching team with this chance to kind of go through sort of like a second or third stage of deconstruction with all of you guys. And you guys have let me do this up here on the stage, and that's been pretty rad. But it's funny, things like the Sermon on the Mount, I've always been a big fan, but coming around this time and going through it, I feel like there are some slight changes in my theology that have, as Wayne would say, given a really good turn to the diamond. And one of the biggest things for me was approaching, even going back to the Beatitudes, but approaching the Sermon on the Mount, continuing that, from this idea as a description of the kingdom. And I know that's just a subtle shift, but this idea to look at everything that Jesus is talking about in here and looking at that as like, okay, what is he describing? This is what the kingdom looks like. That was huge for me. And then as I studied through for my own teaching times and everything, another thing that stood out from that as I looked at this as a description of the kingdom, it just really blew me away, this overarching, and I don't know how many of you guys pulled this out of it, but this overarching like humility that is existing in the kingdom. And for me, as I studied through this stuff, especially for my teaching times, it really hit that this humility was sort of a converse to a lot of the evangelical understanding that I came from. So there really is, almost in Jesus' teachings through the Sermon on the Mount, there's almost this like idea of like, hey guys, stay in your lane. You know, it's really talking against any idea of going out and manipulating and trying to really hit people in the head with any sort of agenda or message. And that blew me away because, like I said, in the evangelical world that I came up in, it's not necessarily aggressive or malicious in any way, but there really is this thing that we need to go out and we need to do this. And as I read through the Sermon on the Mountain and this last time, and I went through this stuff, it really felt like, yeah, you know, this is something that is transformative inside of you. And you need to look at everybody in this new lens and love people in this way. And you need to let them do their thing. And you need to be worried about what's going on with you. That seems very basic when you've got this, you know, speck and log sermon right in the middle of it. But it just hit me in a different way. But also with that, the big thing that came across as I was looking at this as a description of the kingdom was that while it's transformative on an individual level, there is this communal level that's coming out. So if we're looking at this as the kingdom, the last time I taught, I kind of did like a little summary and broke down the Beatitudes and everything. And it's like, okay, what does it look like? There's peaceful people. There's merciful people. There's people who are not trying to make a big show, but the good deeds that they do are noticeable, and they're good for the community around them. So that communal aspect of it really stood out to me. It's like, oh, if we are living this out, and again, it's not just some list of things to do, but if we're living this out and this description really holds true to the transformative work that God's doing in us, this community that looks like that is so beautiful, and it's really something I want to be a part of. And we'll probably get into this stuff a little more with some of the questions or whatever, but it's like, if that is the kingdom, if these are people that just love everybody, they're not out trying to force anybody to change, they're meeting them where they are, they're seeing opportunity to learn from each other, they're being very creative and holding up each other's dignity and their identity and seeing everybody as image bearers of Christ, if we really treat everybody in that way, that could be this beautiful society. And it all comes back to the whole thing that we've talked about over and over, but this idea of shalom, like that overarching theme in this, if this is what the kingdom looks like, this is a community that I want to be a part of. And I'm excited for myself as that I hope that transformation comes. There's so many times that I look in the mirror and I'm just like, I don't know if any of this stuff is happening. But with those of you around in the family and everything too, it's really cool to see, man, could this be something that we're striving for? Could this be something that is happening amongst us and we're being turned into a community that looks like that? Because, again, the last, I'll just say this, the last thing, in converse to the evangelical culture that I came up in, as I was looking at this stuff, I'm like, okay, so what am I supposed to be preaching? So what am I supposed to, you know, what am I selling? If this is what it is, what am I selling? And that communal identity of loving each other, treating each other in this way, it made clear to me that it's like, okay, so we're doing good things and those good deeds shine on their own, but it's not looking at me. It's not for my own gain. It's not for my own exaltation, but it's showing that like there is a beautiful way to be, and that sells itself. I hope some of that made sense. Does that make sense to anybody? All right, cool. So I'm going to let Catherine talk.
Okay. So I've been a church girl my whole life, and now I'm turned into an old church lady. But for a good part of my life, the Bible was neither interesting or relevant. I just did not see how it worked. I was trying really hard. I was in Bible studies, and I went to seminary for a little bit, but I kept hearing the same thing over and over, the same message pulled out, like, humans are bad, God is good, our job is to get other people to convert, and so nobody goes to hell. And that was just kind of what it all seemed to be boiled down to, and it didn't work. But I'm so grateful now that of the time that we all live in, where so many resources are available to lay people on getting to know the Bible, the Bible for Normal People, the Bible Project, theologians who you can just look up online, Amy Jo Levine, Jennifer Garcia Bashaw, Walter Brueggemann, Howard Thurston, people who have deep, rich lives based on what they understand the Bible says. And I'm like, how do I get to that place? So what has been so helpful for me is this understanding of the Bible there is a meta-narrative. There's a thread running through it, but it purposefully contains alternative stories or different theological schools edited the Bible. And so it's okay that there's contradictions and that things don't always make sense, because to me this is now heartwarming, because it means we all need to wrestle with it. This is a document, a living thing that can influence us, but it's not like just rules to follow. We have to really wrestle with our relationship with God, our relationships with each other. And for me, reading this Sermon on the Mount and having to teach bits of it, the first four chapters of Matthew is deliberately setting Jesus up as the new Moses. Moses who delivered the people from slavery into the Promised Land. And so Jesus, I think, in Matthew, for me, comes across as this the new Moses, who's trying to get all of us, his people of his time, out of the things that we enslave ourselves to or allow ourselves to be enslaved to, and take us into this kingdom of God, where these values that are so outlined beautifully in the Beatitudes are there. And so for me, the Sermon on the Mount became like this really living, breathing, expanded version of the Ten Commandments. And like Jeremy just said, the Sermon on the Mount is not as concerned with our relationship with God as it is with our relationship with each other. And all of the values of the Sermon on the Mount are based on compassion and care, community, empathy, concern for others. And they're commandments, in a way, that we are meant to implement together. Not, I can't do them by myself without you. And so this vision of this faith community that Jesus is inviting us into, and he's sort of setting the stage on the mountaintop with these words, this community that he's inviting us into, there's concern for each other, there's concern for the world, there's concern for the planet, there's concern for the things that matter to people who are not like us at all. And to me, that makes it very relevant for today. And I suppose if I had to sum up the Sermon on the Mount, it's like Jesus saying, loving God and loving others, which really are commandments, if you're really interested in doing that, then the Sermon on the Mount contains some things you really ought to consider thinking about and doing. So that's all I got to say.
Thank you, both of you. So the two questions that we got from you all, the first one came from Gail. Thank you. But I'm going to expand on your question a little bit. Her question was, so how do I, as a senior citizen in a retirement community, live out these things, basically? But I want to expand that to not just how do I in a retirement community, but how do I as a young mother with children, how do I in the workplace, how do I as a student, or any other scenario that you might face, how do you live this stuff out? And I'm going to respond to that and then open it up to the other teachers as well. I was thinking about it and I thought, we do talk a lot about being present, right? We do talk about being present, and I think that's important, vital. But I think sometimes it's good to step back and think about how many bazillion years humanity has been on the face of the planet, right? And for some reason, in God's or providences or however you want to image it, you are here now in this place. And the person that you are talking to in that moment is, for such a time as this, you were planted there. And it is to be the image of Christ to that person. So whether that is a caregiver or a two-year-old or a fellow student or a boss or a coworker a neighbor. You are Christ in that conversation. And the Sermon on the Mount has opened up a new way of thinking about those conversations. Giving compassion, listening, following up, how are you doing? They say fine, and you go, okay, but how are you really doing? You know, being friendly in an elevator. And now that's really hard for those of us who are introverts. On the East Coast, they actually do that. You get in deep conversations in the elevator, and it's the most bizarre and unnerving thing. But I think we can take a page out of their book. Be interested in people. So yeah, wherever you are, in whatever moment, for whatever reason, God has planted you there to show his character. And however that might be, if that is just taking a breath and being patient with your two-year-old for one more minute, that's a holy thing. If that is listening to the criticism of your boss who's going off on you, but you listen for the truth of the conversation to see if somewhere in whatever he's saying there is a nugget of truth that you can learn and grow from, and the humility of that. When you're speaking to someone who's on your last nerve and you allow another moment to see and look for the image of God in them, that's what it's doing. So I hope that answers your question, maybe a little bit. It's hard. And you're not going to hit it 100% of the time. But you know what? If you hit it 1% of the time, you've made a difference to somebody. And then try for 2%. So, others? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'll jump in. That's a really great question. I have three thoughts, I guess. The first one, I think of the famous quote from Mother Teresa, do little things with great love. And I mean, I think I'm the youngest member here, but the older I get and the more wisdom I get, the more relevant I find that becoming, right? Where as youthful ambitions, dreams, the things we think actually make life meaningful fail us or crumble or whatever, discovering it's those small day-to-day moments that really count for the most, I think, in the kingdom. One specific example that's maybe relevant to this question that I just had the privilege of experiencing yesterday, I went to this centering prayer gathering yesterday morning at a church in Montecito, and I think there was one other woman there who was maybe late 30s, early 40s, and aside from that, I was the youngest person there by a solid 20, 30 years. And all we did was, there were three 30-minute periods of silence where we just sat in silence in a room in a circle, and even that, just sitting there holding space, was such, it was a ministry to me, and gave me a lot of perspective, simply sitting with these people who, again, were older, maybe in kind of worldly terms didn't have as much to do or as much to offer, but they sat in silence with the Spirit. And yeah, I guess I share that. It's kind of next level contemplative Christianity. But literally, like, you don't even have to say or do anything to connect with the kingdom and to pray and to minister to others. And it was really sweet, really powerful time. So I felt blessed by those folks just showing up. There was a third thought I had. Oh, yeah, and the last thing, and this is really encouraging to me when I think about it. You know, Jesus says, I think it's later towards the end of Matthew, you know, he talks about the last day and how people will say, oh, we cast out demons, we did all this stuff in your name, and Jesus says, depart from me, I never knew you. And that's often framed as a warning, but there's this really sweet, beautiful, encouraging other side where, you know, he mentions to even just giving a cup of water to a child, like, to the extent that you did it to the least of them, you did to me. And that, like, that's truly, like, the lowest, most accessible bar, giving someone a cup of water. Like, I think, and for Jesus to say, no, I'm present in that, like, the Christ is in that. Maybe low bar isn't the right language to use, but the accessibility, right? The kingdom is here. It is among you. And I suspect, here's an encouraging thought, that if we get to the afterlife, to heaven, whatever that looks like, my hunch is that we're going to realize we did a lot more for the kingdom and embodied Christ, even a lot more than we realized. And that's an encouraging thought. Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew. Awesome. Really brief. I was going to say just real quick is, you know, in Gail, in your situation in a senior home, and Ginny brought up the example of a mother with young children and kind of the everyday struggles with your boss or work life. I do draw back to, like, my own situation. I talk about it a lot, but I'm a primary caretaker to a severely disabled daughter, and it's a very emotionally, physically, mentally draining situation. And the talk that I was honored, privileged to give a while back on this was sort of a reference to when Jesus, he mentions a couple of times in the Sermon on the Mount, the golden rule of love your neighbor as yourself. And and I think April Lynn was really good in her talk of kind of summarizing the whole point of the Sermon on the Mount, that a lot of that material that you see in the Sermon on the Mount is expounded upon later in Matthew. And there's a point at which Jesus is asked, you know, what is the greatest commandment? And he says to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and love your neighbor like yourself. And so that gave me the cool honor to go in and look at where that love your God, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, what that really means. And as I kind of went into during my talk is, ultimately, that's about God loving you, letting God love you where you're at. And I really believe that in our situations that we are being asked to kind of let down the guard and the veil before God. And so if you're in your desperate times, like I find myself a lot of times spent, instead of, you know, erecting the church veil between me and God, like in the holy prayer, it's, you know, I don't know if you guys, if you were here, you remember George, who's not here today, George Meyer, talking about yelling at God and screaming at God to, where are you, you know? And that's when his relationship with God changed, is when he just came kind of nakedly and honestly before God. And that's what I would say, is that we are being invited to, in this one-on-one deep relationship with God, where he loves us. It's not that we work to love him. We let him love us. And that's where the strength to have our relationships comes from, is sometimes the just honesty to be who we are before him and let him, he knows who we are, but the key is that we come to know ourselves through him, and that's a privilege I believe that Christ in his cross and his resurrection offers for us, is that direct one-on-one. So that's what I'd say.
Thank you. Un momento. Is this on that question? What? Okay, time out.
Hi, I know you have another question going, but you said you guys love challenging, so I have a challenge for you. This may be, I guess, something that I haven't quite weeded out yet, but as someone who grew up in the church, I am challenged by the fact that you guys are kind of saying we don't need to go out and convert people, you know, or to, you know, to evangelize. because, you know, growing up, the job as a Christian was to go out and make more Christians because we want to save people. And there's been, you know, challenging to that, but it's hard to, I guess, hear and be like, we don't have to do that at all. We can kind of just be ourselves and that's enough. When there's, I know there's verses that say, you know, go out and make Christians. So how do you guys reconcile that with you know, those ideas?
Before you do, wait. Jeremy, one quick second. I think I'm the one that opened that can of worms with what I said. And basically what, and so I'm just going to pull back a little bit and say, that had been a super strong emphasis. I'm not saying never, that doesn't matter, but I'm just saying that when that's the sole emphasis of what a church is all about, I think we've missed a lot. Now I'll let Jeremy go.
I had most of this conversation this last week with Gail, but her and I were talking about tracks. How many of you guys have experience with tracks? I was saying I throughout my lifetime have had this weird sort of magnetism of the if a group of us, if all of us were walking down Main Street in Ventura, there used to be a guy on the corner or a group on the corner of Main Street Friday nights that would hand out tracks. And I could be in the middle of the crowd and they would reach around people to hand it to me. And I always just like wondered, like, dude, me and Jesus are cool. Like, what is it that is telling you that I need this kind of thing? But this thing that that came to mind as I've wrestled with exactly what you're talking about, just like I said, like, okay, well, what are we supposed to be selling? What are we supposed to be doing with this? I'm settling into this place more of the just be. And so much of the message that that Jesus is giving is really just telling us how to be, what it means. He is the perfect human, and how do we be human the way he is showing us to be? Now, you talk about verses saying, like, go out and share the good news and all that stuff. I think about the Great Commission and go out and make disciples. And the tradition that I came up in, I mean, I was down there in the stadium, Mohawk fan at the Franklin Graham Festival, watching everybody go up to the front to say their prayer and do their whole thing. And I remember thinking, like, okay, yeah, this is what we're supposed to be doing. And then I remember thinking, like, wait a minute, like, all these people went up there and they prayed their prayer, and then they just sort of like, all right, now go about your life and figure out what you're going to do with this. Go find a church, go do this whole thing. And the attitude of the Great Commission when it says go out and make disciples, I've been thinking more about what that looks like. And it's like these people that Jesus is talking to in this collection of sermons, specifically these people that are the 12, they've been following him around. They've been walking in the dust of his steps. So in that respect, I almost have this drive the next time somebody goes to hand me a tract to be like, all right, cool, now give me your phone number. Are we going to move in together? Are we going to live together and spend some time in this whole thing? Because that's really what we're pushing for, right? If we're making disciples, we're living together and in that, what is it, the Eugene Peterson thing of practicing the rhythms, yes, the unforced rhythms. That's what's happening, practicing the unforced rhythms of grace. And this kingdom that is being described in this is that communally. We're living this together. So what I had to realize, coming from the same thing that you're saying, is that in living alongside and loving my neighbor, we are doing this together. And so if evangelism is really a thing, and I'm not sure where I land on this totally now, but if evangelism really is a thing, they are evangelizing to me just as I'm evangelizing to them. And we're practicing these rhythms together, and we're figuring out how to live it out. So that's where I am now.
Real quick.
Okay, we do have a question, so.
Okay.
Go ahead. Real quick?
No, you go ahead.
Okay, all right.
Never mind.
Can you answer both of them?
Hold on to it.
It was actually more of a comment on the same topic. So I grew up in the Lutheran church with the, you know, you better be thumping or you're not doing it right. And as you were talking, though, what popped into my mind was the scripture in Matthew where it says, let your light so shine before men that they'll see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. And where I'm just personally at now, for what it's worth, is that in a place where it's clear to me that My job, somebody else talked about the where we're at and what our job is or whatever, but I'm clear to me that my job is to be as aligned as I'm seeking to be with God and live my life in that way. And then, you know, hopefully, me living my life, people will notice, and then they're asking me, why do you have so much peace, or why do you have so much joy, or why do you have so much whatever? And then that's an opportunity to reply, but yeah, I can't get around the place, because Ginny, you said something about that sparked for me something also in this growing up, the way I grew up, where I resonated with Catherine's comments, where, you know, God was to be feared. This is kind of a Trinity thing, so sorry to get off topic, but God was like this, an entity to be feared, and yes, he loved me with his unconditional love, but also don't step out of line, because you might get Sodom and Gomorrah, like you just fire from heaven, right? So Christ was a way to avoid the wrath of God, not a way to be in the world that was the expression of God's unconditional love towards the rest of humanity. So what I appreciate, and thank you all for doing this series, is that for me it sort of solidified the aspect of being God in the world from being more like Jesus, and for me helping release that, like literally being in fear of the Lord, not the awesome, not being in awe, but like being terrified, but rather being Jesus-like, and the love in the world is the way to the be with each other part, and not, okay, I'm gonna.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Bryant.
Years ago, first off, on tracks, I don't know if anybody remembers Chick Tracks. Probably not. It's kind of interesting because, yeah, I've been in the church now for more decades than I probably want to say, but those were terrifying. You can look them up probably online, and they were always like out of the book of Revelation and like, I just don't want this to happen to me. That's what those tracks were all about. Anyway, coming back from the mission field, my family and I spent a year in the mission field, which seemed like a long time, because it was not easy. We didn't go to the Riviera, we went to Siberia. And so coming out of that, traveling home, it was cheaper for us to go across a bunch of different countries. We wound up in England, and we stayed at a place called the Foreign Missions Club, and we stayed there because it was cheap. But wound up having like a family room for my wife and our three kids to stay in. And you ate communally. And so we wound up having meals with people that had been in the mission field for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. So speaking to this idea of go forth, you know, the great commandment, or the, you know, the great commission. All of those people to a individual person were exuding all of the things that you read about in the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. And they lived it in this little hostel in the center of London, just like they lived it in all of these different, and we sat in awe, and they treated us like we were wonderful people too, which we knew wasn't true. You know, with our paltry little time spent in the field, they had lived it. And what, I guess this is a roundabout way of saying it, that is what we are doing here. By exuding all of these things, you are spreading the gospel. Because Jesus, at the end of this thing in verse 8, talks about, look, if you listen to my teachings, right, and you do them, you will be as a wise person who built their house upon the rock, which means that the winds may come, the waves may come, the news when you open it up every day and go, what now? That's going to come and go, and you're going to remain this person. Check it out. It's in verse 8, 26 through 30, I think it is, at the very end of this teaching. So that's what I think that, if I can encapsulate it, that's what we're building toward, is to be, one last real quick story. I remember seeing this young woman, like in the South Sudan, and this newspaper reporter was, or this television reporter was talking to her, and she was ministering in this really harsh context, and the reporter asked her, when are you going home? And she said, she just got this puzzled look on her face and looked at the reporter and said, I am home. That's, for many of us, that's what this place is.
Thank you. One of the advantages we have found to having a teaching team rather than just one teacher, if we had one teacher, that teacher would generally agree with him or herself all the time, right? But occasionally, when one of us is teaching, the others of us learn something new, see something from a different perspective, or have a question about something. So our next question actually comes from a member of our teaching team. Andrew?
Yeah, I have a question, y'all. it was just something that came up to me this past week. I read through the Sermon on the Mount again a handful of times in preparation for this, since I was expecting to potentially answer questions. And I ran across this line. Jesus, he gives this pretty famous teaching about, do not be anxious for anything. Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap, but your heavenly Father feeds them. And don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. And then as kind of the antidote to that, like the positive reinforcement, he says, seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added to you. And like the other folks here, I grew up in church, and this idea of seek first the kingdom is kind of a truism, something you hear a lot in Christian circles. But I think if I'm not careful, like, can become one of those nice sounding things, but it's like, okay, concretely, like, what does that actually mean? How is that an antidote to anxiety? You know, as it comes up in the context there. So, and I don't think there's one right answer. So I would be curious to hear, seek first the kingdom of God and all these things will be added to you. Kind of, what does that mean to each of you individually? What comes up with that?
These are the times we really miss Wayne.
I think, April Lynn, if I could call you out, you had done some thinking about this.
Yes, I think I need a little time.
Okay. All right. Gather away. I'll just say this quick. I have been blessed with an overabundance of acquisitiveness, which means basically I like to buy things and have things and such. And there was a point in time when I was reading that verse, and I realized I can't handle the second half, because I blow right past the seek first the kingdom and his righteousness and get to, and all these things get added to you. So I'm like, what things? What things do I get? Is it a Mercedes at last? It is not. And so I ended up crossing that part out in my Bible, which may sound sacrilegious to some of you. But I realized, you know, like Jack Nicholson says, you can't handle that. And that was a very good reminder for me to stay in the first part and let the second part take care of itself, which I think is somewhat of what it was talking about.
Others? Okay, so my thinking on this is, so when Jesus says that thing, he's talking about anxiety. He's talking about, you know, do not be anxious because the birds have what they need and the flowers have what they need. So when it says these things will be given to you, those are the things that he's talking about, is you will get the things you need. And I think the way a lot of us tend to think about this saying is, seek first the kingdom of righteousness, and then you will get these things, as if it's a reward for seeking the kingdom. And what stuck out to me is that word, and. He doesn't say then, he says and. He says, seek first the kingdom, and these things will be added to you. So what I think he's saying here is to, you know, your priority should be to seek the kingdom, to seek out to live the kingdom ways, to seek out the fruits of the kingdom, the joy, the peace, to live with righteousness. And also, these things will be given to you. You don't have to worry about food and clothing, which is hard. I will be the first to say that I'm an extremely anxious person, and to the point where sometimes I surprise even myself when I think about it, the ways that I can become anxious. But, you know, living in faith, trying to remember those things, things have a tendency to work out the way that they are meant to work out. And if I am prioritizing worry, then I'm not even going to enjoy them. You know, I'm going to be continually worrying about wanting more and more and more. So the priority there should be seeking the kingdom, seeking to live in ways of peace and joy and love and humility and meekness, and then letting the other things worry about themselves. And that is a lesson to me, too, right now. So
thank you.
Can I tag on that for a second?
Sure.
I feel like I'm sorry I'm talking a lot on this, but this stuff, I get excited talking about these things. I think that is super crucial, and I think it ties back to your question about evangelism, and I think this is going back to this whole looking at this as a description of the kingdom. We may have a mindset that is setting all this stuff up as a transactional thing, right? So if the kingdom to me is go out, get these people to get in the boat so they don't go to hell. If that's what it is, if it's this mission for me to go out and hand out the tracts or do that kind of stuff, I'm missing the whole point. So then I'm looking at this as, okay, well, if I go out and do this thing, then I'm going to get all these things coming back to me. And we all have seen that prosperity gospel thing splattered across the news and all this stuff. We know how that goes. But if the kingdom, just like you said, is this picture of living in a way where we love each other, we lift each other up, we meet each other's needs, and we take care of each other and respect each other and all that kind of stuff. If my main concern is loving people and living amongst people and treating people with dignity and respect and living in that way, I'm going to have everything I need. It's not like I have to do this certain thing to get this certain thing. It's, hey, be concerned with living this way. For me, a big thing is, like, I have a really hard time with planning for the future or, you know, what's your 5-year plan, what's your 10-year plan. I can't look at my wife as I say that because I'm sure she is very set up. There we go. But where I was going with that is I think there's less of a concern of, like, what are you going to do, where are you going to be in this kind of thing, and more with, like, who are you going to be? So if we can try and be these kind of loving people, we're going to have everything we need. We don't need to get caught up in meeting all these needs there. So I think that's exactly what you were saying, but going along with that.
Thank you. Cool. We have a question from Victoria. And I'm going to ask, it's now going to be open to all of you, but raise your hand high because I'm short, and, you know, if you do this, I won't see you.
I had to write my question down because I can get a little verbose. I apologize for that. But this does tie into what everyone was just talking about. One of the things that I felt really stoked into me as a baby Christian is that heaven is the ultimate goal. And to get there, you have to accept Jesus as God's son and be baptized. In 25 years, my viewpoint has certainly expanded simply from living in community with people who don't identify as religious or spiritual. James 2:17 says, without faith, without works is dead. And something I've learned recently, particularly ever since January 20th, 2017, y'all know what happened on that day. I have witnessed more and more people who claim Christianity as their faith use it as a means to enact power and control over other people, thus turning others, especially young people, off from church and faith in God altogether. And yet, those same people who have zero interest in claiming Christianity, I am continuously witnessing them live out what Jesus called us to do, giving of ourselves to care for one another, not for a chance to get into heaven, but because it is the right thing to do. I hear this sentiment passed around a lot. If you need the threat of hell to treat people kindly, you are not actually a good person. And if there's one thing I've learned in my 25 years of being a dedicated Christian, is that everything Jesus spoke of, humility, servantry, empathy, it all just makes sense in my head and my heart. So having said all of that, I just cannot fathom God eternally abandoning those people who do his work without even realizing it. And I wanted to know your take on that.
We are beginning to run short of time, and so I will have one of you. No, don't be sorry. But if we could just have one response and then one more question, okay. And then we'll move on.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'll try to tie this in somehow with the Sermon on the Mount as well. But this week I was actually talking to Laura about, there's a part in Philippians where Paul is talking about different factions of Christians who present the gospel for different reasons. Some to exert power and create factions, and some out of love. And his response is, either way, it doesn't matter to me, it's Christ. And it's such a counterintuitive thing, because it's like, no, this is Christ and that's not. And I was actually commenting, because I have the same thing, that the irony of the last 10 years or so is how many people who don't claim Christianity as their religion or any religion, you will talk, and they are, as a longtime Christian, they are speaking this truth about loving your enemies and welcoming the poor and the strangers and not excluding people for who they are as people. And I'm like, they get it way more than those people get it. But guess what's happening? We're talking about the ultimate love of the universe, which is Jesus. Like, either way, it doesn't matter. He's being talked about. And it's a process. It's part of a long process, and we're in the beginning. We're always in the middle of this process. But there's a bigger process underway, and his love is more and more being talked about. And even in the harshness and the inhumaneness of a lot of the stuff we see going on, there's going to be pushback about the ultimate humanity of every single person. And no, we don't want people suffering, and it is brutal, and it is, and in my opinion, evil. But at the same time, we're having the contrast, which is, this is not how you treat people. This is how you treat people. And I think that love is going to continue to grow. And I don't know if that completely answers your question. Is there was that getting towards it, or is there more one a harder part of your question you want? Yeah. I would just say that leave it at that I had never noticed that in Philippians. It doesn't matter. Either way, Christ. What? Like, no, it's got to be my way. No, either way, Christ will be honored and served. It doesn't make any sense, but neither does love in its deepest way, right? Love will be served one way or another.
Thank you.
There's a third way. Thank you, James. Yeah.
We have time for one more question, and before all your hands go up, if you have questions, or if something comes to your mind on your way home, I wish I'd asked that, shoot an email to Becky. Thanks, Becky. And she'll forward it to the teaching team. We'll respond to it, because you probably do have more questions. And I don't want to cut the time off, but on the other hand, I don't want to hold you here and our poor childcare workers well into the evening hours. So. Do we have one more? Anyone?
Hello.
Oh, no.
Do we have another one? Please.
Okay.
How did you do it?
Thank you. not really a question, but more of a comment. I just wanted to say thank you to the team, because it can't be easy going out there and presenting this material. I can only imagine how difficult it is, so I just wanted to say thanks.
Thank you. Sure.
This is weird for me, because I too am a displaced evangelical, on purpose, because Christ is bigger than what I was taught. But I feel like, in Baptist terms, giving witness. So I'm here to tell you that for 55 years, I have been so blessed to know the truth of what you're talking about with the birds taking care of themselves. I now live in a really luxury place because somebody else pays the bills. People in ministry came to me a year and a half ago and said, a bunch of people, a long time, they've supported me through 55 years of ministry, but also they just said they wanted to finance my retirement. And it cost that commitment, what does it cost them? Something like $1,500? I have had nothing to do with money my whole life. If rent is $1,400, then it's more than that, or that used to be rent. Anyhow, it's a lot of money to live in a retirement community. You must have figured that out in your own lives by now. But they're picking up the bill. I have been hungry and said, Lord, look, I've prayed, I've done my job, I've rehearsed, I took care of my unit, I did this. Look, this was all your idea. You got to take care of it. And he did. Every single time I have been in a vehicle where the van was lifted up out of a ditch and saved my life. I have had more miracles in my life than the average schmo, I think. I really do. And I'm just here to tell you that whether you're following your call, and so therefore you think like I did for centuries, that what I did was serving the Lord. Now that was just saying yes to what the Lord told me to do. I can tell you that he wants everybody in heaven, or whatever we call that, he loves each creation more than I do, than I ever will have the capacity to do. And that he will supply our needs. He does supply our needs. He is at this very moment supplying our needs, which may or may not have anything to do with what we want. And I just wanted to say that, because I felt like I needed to say that. That it's true.
Thank you all for your questions. Thank you, teachers, for your answers, and even more than that, for your teaching. I am blessed by you all every single week. And Kathy and the worship team, you're up.